in a lab somewhere in the remote part of this world, a tadpole was cloned. In 1968, when I was a teenager in high school, the first bone marrow transplant was performed in this country at the University of Minnesota. In 1978, when I was a surgical resident down at the University of Kentucky, the first human was born through the process of in vitro fertilization, a test tube baby. Her name, Louise Brown, born in England. In 1996, when I could still run 7-minute miles, the first mammal was born through the process of reproductive cloning. That animal's name was Dolly the sheep. In 1998, when I could still run 10-minute miles, the first embryonic stem cell line was developed at the University of Wisconsin. These 5 events, little did I know, that happened in my lifetime so far, are what 5 events that bring us together tonight to discuss one of the most controversial and, I suspect, one of the most talked about issues of our time, and that's stem cell research. There are really no other topics that really cross so many boundaries that affect our lives in so many different ways. The area of medicine. Many scientists believe that this discovery rivals that of antibiotics, surgery, and anesthesia. Politics. Last week, the cover of Newsweek, the battle over stem cells after Christopher Reeve, the medical promise and the political minefields. The paper daily has usually topics about all of the presidential issues. One of the top 5 issues is stem cell research. Candidates accusing each other of right-wing ideology versus giving false hope to people with wishful thinking. There have been new divisions in our government that don't even that cross party lines because of stem cell research. And what about our tax dollars? That's a consideration. Big business. Who will pay? Who's going to pay? If in the future there are some treatments that are involved, I'll guarantee you big business will be there. Will technology again exceed the ability for us to pay for it? In religion and ethics, moral values have been challenged to the limit. Families have been split. The most notable is the Reagan family. One son opposes. The other is for. There's a lot of misinformation out there when it comes to stem cell research. I overheard someone say right here that why do we really need to even talk about the subject of stem cell research? Because I already know the answers. Okay? Well, if you do, I applaud your study. But for the most of us, there may be more questions than answers. This discussion is informational. What are stem cells? Where do they come from? What is an embryo? What about the research? What about government policy? And are there really moral and ethical or even biblical principles that may actually apply to this subject? Now, this discussion is not a review of the abortion issue. Abortion has to do with the interruption and the destruction of the normal human reproductive processes that occur inside the body. The subject of stem cell research occurs outside the body. This is not a science class. You'll learn some scientific information that you didn't know. But there is no way that I can present to you all of the scientific information available on this subject. I may use some words that seem kind of big, but you know what they say about big words? They're really just a lot of little small words put together for simple meaning. This is not a political statement. Although it is a political issue, unfortunately, who you vote for is your business. not the concern of this discussion. This is not a religious sermon. This is not any type of church doctrine. I am not here for the purpose to change your beliefs or to convince you of something that's right or something that's wrong. I have not been given any instructions as to what to say or to teach in this presentation. With that said, I want to thank you for being here. There are a lot of people's faces out here that I know. They're good friends of mine, relatives, my toughest critics right over here. I want to thank you for coming. I think that the study is going to be good. I'd like to acknowledge people that have helped me with this presentation. Mike Pence, he's helped me with the illustrations, and I appreciate what he has done for me there. Sharon McMillan helped me gather a lot of this information. And Mark helped me with this presentation. Computer, I'm computer illiterate. So he's helped me. So if any of this is wrong up here, you know who to blame. What is a stem cell? What is a stem cell? A stem cell is a cell that has the ability or the potential to develop into other different types of cells. Stem cells are the basic building blocks of your body. When a cell becomes specialized, like a red blood cell or a muscle cell, if something happens to it, it really cannot produce a copy of itself. Instead, it has to be replenished, or it has to be repaired or replaced by populations of stem cells. Stem cells are what I would call the master cells. In the embryo, stem cells have the potential to become all of the cell types of the human body, which is about 220 different types. In the adult, stem cells replenish existing cells that are worn out or destroyed by natural processes or by trauma. They develop into mature cells that are specialized in function, such as heart cells, skin cells, nerve cells. So basically, the two characteristics of stem cells that you must remember is that stem cells are not only are unspecialized, but they can produce copies of themselves. That is called self-renewal. Stem cells can also have the potential to produce other types of cells that are specialized. That is called differentiation. Where do you find stem cells? The two main sources that we are talking about tonight are the embryo and the adult tissue. There are other less common sources. The umbilical cord blood, placenta, aborted fetuses, and reprogrammed adult cells through genetic engineering. We won't really mention much about those because those are fairly experimental. Another way to classify stem cells is according to their potential. According to their potential. There are three classes. The first class we won't talk about in this discussion, except to mention that the total potent, or the total cell that has all of the potential to produce all cells, is the human zygote, or the fertilized egg. The pluripotent cells are the ones that all the adult cell types come from in the human body, and those are the embryonic stem cells. And the multipotent, or the multiple potent cells, are the ones in the adult cell, or the adult cells that have limited cell type differentiation. Now, what does that mean? That means that if you have a stem cell, like in the bone marrow, and the bone marrow needs to be replenished, that stem cell will replenish the bone marrow with bone marrow cells. With bone marrow cells. If you have stem cells in the brain, and the neural cells or the brain cells need to be replenished, Those stem cells will replenish the nerve cells, not bone marrow cells. So the change or the differentiation of the adult stem cells is limited. Is limited. Let's look first at embryonic stem cells. Embryonic stem cells are taken from the inner cell mass of a 5 to 6 day old embryo. Now this is the embryonic stem cells. The process is performed in the lab. That is called in vitro, which simply means literally in a glass or in a test tube or in a petri dish. Something that occurs outside the body. The embryo, of course, is harvested or sacrificed when the inner cell mass is taken. And when that happens, then those embryonic stem cells are allowed to either do one of two things. And that is replenish itself, replicate itself, or it's allowed to change into a specialized cell, potentially providing a source of adult cells. Now, the human blastocyst, or embryo, in this stage, is about the size of a dot or a pinhead. The inner cell mass itself, right here, contains about 30 to 40 cells. As I said, embryonic stem cells have the potential to develop into all cell types. You may hear the term stem cell line. What does that mean? Well, stem cell line is simply mean a colony of the embryonic stem cells where millions of embryonic stem cells have reproduced themselves to form a colony of cells. Once this stem cell line is established, it can be frozen, it can be preserved, it can be saved, it can be sent to research labs or whatever. Now, not all stem cell lines are the same, however. Some will spontaneously change into cells when they're not supposed to. Some grow faster and better than others. It takes sometimes up to 6 months to have grow one stem cell line. And the success rate, usually taking about 100 embryos for every 5 stem cell lines, although that percentage is actually improving. This is a theoretical slide of how embryonic stem cells may be able to have the potential to change into various other types of cells. These are electron micrographs of different cells where they have the potential to change into all cell types of the body. This is sort of what I've already said in picture, and that is the fact that the human blastocyst, the inner cell mass, is taken and it is grown to form embryonic stem cells. Now, this step right here, to here, to here, is pretty well worked out. But to get from embryonic stem cells down to these specialized cells, it's not worked out very well at all. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. And in theory, if these specialized cells can repair damaged cells, such as in the heart, then perhaps this is a good thing. What about adult stem cells? Adult stem cells are also unspecialized cells, but they are in specialized organs and tissues. Now, adult stem cells have not been isolated in every body tissue. These are the tissues where adult stem cells have been found: bone marrow, skin, blood, muscle, liver, pancreas, brain, gut lining, fat, and retina, and also in the cornea, which I do not have mention of here. Now, adult stem cells have been around for a long time. There is actually more research money being spent on adult stem cell research than on embryonic stem cell research at this date. And even though since adult stem cells with the appropriate match would have less chance of rejection, that's immunologic rejection or rejection because of antibody formation, there are limitations to adult stem cells. The limitations are threefold. One, they cannot differentiate into all cell types. Number two, there is increased difficulty in growing them in large quantities, especially as the person gets older. And thirdly, there's really no standard isolation techniques of adult stem cells as opposed to embryonic stem cells. Now, why is this important to talk about? Well, there are some potential uses of stem cells. A lot of this is theory, and a lot of it has not happened, but someday it may. Someday it may. The main use, which we've all heard about, is called regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine, or cell-based therapy. And what that means is that therapy is based on giving someone cells, not drugs, not surgery, not a pill, but a cell. Lots of cells. Okay. Cells that can do things that other cells in your body have quit doing. Appropriate differentiated stem cells, or maybe even stem cells that are yet not specialized, can actually be transplanted, in theory, into diseased or damaged tissues or organs, okay, in order to either regenerate new cells or to replace the damaged ones. Now, there are over 100 million Americans that are affected with these diseases. Parkinson's, diabetes, Alzheimer's, spinal cord injury, heart disease, muscular dystrophy, stroke, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. These have been some of the diseases that have actually been at least proposed that may be able to be helped with stem cell research. Now, as we know, there are certain blood disorders that have been placed in remission with adult stem cells through bone marrow transplantation. However, none of these diseases to date have ever been cured with embryonic stem cell research or anything else. So a lot of this is theory yet. This is a slide how this works with stem cell medicine. And that is the fact that you have on this side embryonic stem cells. Here you have adult stem cells. In theory, they're specialized into other cells and they can be given or transplanted into people with diseases, or they can be used to discover drugs or to evaluate drugs. Another potential use, drug screening and evaluation. This actually may be one of the first applications. And you can imagine putting differentiated cells down and actually having them see how drugs may affect these cells. Because if you do that, then you may not have to use humans to test drugs on. You may be able to test them on the cells before you give them to the human. If you have a beating heart cells in a petri dish, then there may be heart medicine that can affect that or not affect it in a good or adverse way. Understanding early developmental problems, birth defects, infertility, things that affect us maybe in our own environment may be helped through stem cell research. But the key word is potential. On the horizon. When we look at the advances in medicine over the last 100 years, whether you look at anesthesia or you look at surgery, CAT scans, x-rays, whatever, you're talking about long processes. Tonight we talk about research that is, quotes, in the embryonic phase. 6 years old. 6 years old for most of this research. So basically what I've said so far is this. We have adult stem cells. We have embryonic stem cells. We have embryonic stem cells that come from in vitro fertilization clinics or therapeutic cloning. We're going to talk more about that in a few minutes. We have adult stem cells that come from adult organ tissue. Adult stem cells seem to have some limitations. Embryonic stem cells do not have some of those same limitations, but they do have their own problems, and we'll see in just a little bit what those problems are. I think now I'd like to turn my attention for a few minutes and turn your attention to the human embryo. Most of the time when we talk about prenatal development, we talk about development, you don't really know maybe what we're talking about. So for a few minutes, I'd like to look at early embryogenesis. These are the stages of early embryogenesis in the human being. When we get down to stage 3 and 4, and between stage 3 and 4 and 5, there's a very important event that occurs here, and that's called uterine implantation. All of these events here can occur in vitro or in a glass, a test tube, or they can occur in vivo or inside the body. But only when it gets to this point can further development occur only inside the body. There has never been a human fetus grown or has developed outside the body. Never has happened, no matter what kind of sci-fi movie you've watched. Okay. The first stage of embryogenesis is the fertilized egg. The human zygote, 23 chromosomes from the spermatozoa and 23 chromosomes from the egg come together to form a 46 chromosome cell. The human zygote. That's fertilization. That's conception. Stage 2. The first division, up until divisions 3 and 4, for the first 3 or 4 days, this ball of cells is called the human morula, which is about the 3 to 4 day old embryo. But between the 4th and 5th and the 6th days occur a very dynamic and spectacular process. The morula turns into the human blastocyst, which has two parts. This is the preplacenta, or the trophoblast, and this is the inner cell mass. This inner cell mass is where the embryo further develops, where all of the embryonic germ cell layers come from, where development really starts. To get from this stage 4 to stage 5, implantation must be involved. Implantation begins on day 6 to day 7, and it continues until day 12 to 14. Okay. This is another picture of what happens in utero. Fertilization in the fallopian tube, the morula, travels down the fallopian tube, down into the uterine cavity, where there it is implanted as a blastocyst into the wall of the uterus. And then it begins to form the germ cell layers. At 2 weeks, the germ cell layers begin to form. You know, I think the Bible talks about the germ cell layers. It certainly talks about early embryonic development. There are 3 germ cell layers. The first to develop is the ectoderm, the nerves and the skin. The second layer is the mesoderm, the bone, muscle, and cartilage. The third layer is the endoderm, which is the gut or the visceral organs. Psalms 139, 13 through 16. The psalmist writer says that this creation is awesome and wonderful. The psalmist writer says, "You formed my inward parts." You formed my inward parts. When you formed my inward parts, when you saw my substance was yet unformed. Or my one translation says, body was yet unformed. The unformed body. We're not talking about a mature fetus here. We're talking about early embryonic development. Look what else that he says. He says here that my frame was not hidden from you. What's your frame? Well, it's your bone. It's your muscle. It's your cartilage. That's your frame. He talks not only about the frame here, but he also says that I will praise you for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Not am going to be made. I am being made. You see? The Job, the 10th chapter, verses 8 through 12. Job says that it was your hands, God, that made me and fashioned me. Okay? Yep. Back. Okay. He says that you clothed me with skin and flesh. What's that? Isn't that the ectoderm? Of course. And knit me together with bones and sinews. Sinews are tendons. Okay? The mesoderm. You granted me life. When? When you did these things. When did these things start? They start in the early embryonic phase of development. Now, take you back to this slide. There are two things that I want to consider now. The first thing is, where do embryonic stem cells come from? There are two sources: in vitro fertilization clinics and therapeutic cloning. Therapeutic cloning, for all intents and purposes, is not something that we really need to talk about because it just doesn't exist right now. However, I'm going to talk about it anyway because you hear a lot about it. Okay? But we're going to talk about in vitro fertilization clinics because I have some problems with in vitro fertilization clinics. In 1978, as I said before, the first test tube baby was born through the process of in vitro fertilization. It took about 80 tries to get one successful pregnancy. This concept was introduced in the United States in 1981. There were over 200,000 babies have been born through this process. Many couples take advantage of the process of in vitro fertilization. What is the process? Well, the process is where female eggs are fertilized after they have been removed from the female, and they are fertilized in a petri dish or test tube, and they are allowed to grow to about a 4 to 6 day old blastocystic embryo. And there that embryo is taken, or those embryos are taken, and they are transferred to the female's uterus, where there they are allowed to implant. Now, many times, multiple embryos have to be taken to be transferred in order for implantation to occur. That's how sometimes there are multiple births, sometimes there's not. But when there are not multiple births, that doesn't mean that multiple embryos were not transferred, because not all the embryos take. As a matter of fact, the success rate across the board is somewhere between 17 and 30%. Okay? If successful, especially on the first try, then most couples are left with about 5 to 15 so-called surplus embryos. What are they going to do with it? What are they going to do with it? Well, there are five things that can happen to the surplus embryo. One, it could be discarded or destroyed immediately. There is about a 5-year limit for storage. Most in vitro fertilization clinics cannot store past 5 years. They don't have the room. Okay. They could be donated to other infertile couples, but most couples don't want somebody else's DNA in their children. They can be stored, as I said, through a freezing process, but after they are frozen, really only about 60% are ever used. They can be researched. They can be adopted. There are some organizations that adopt frozen embryos just so they won't be destroyed, but they don't have any use for them. They don't do anything with them. They're in the refrigerator. So really, out of these five options, I really only see one that guarantees the embryo will ever have a chance to develop into an adult. There are about 200,000 to 400,000 surplus embryos at any one time in our country in in vitro fertilization clinics. So I have some serious questions. In order to be successful, multiple eggs have to be fertilized and implanted. How many? How many should be selected for implantation? How many should be frozen? Should they be screened for birth defects beforehand? That technology is available, by the way. Should there be the process of selective reduction, which that technology is also available, to reduce the number that take? These are tough choices. These are things to think about. Things to think about. What about cloning? We hear about cloning. Cloning. Everybody talks about clone, the attack of the clones. Clone. Fancy words for cloning is somatic cell nuclear transfer, SCNT. Sounds fancy, but it's really very simple if you think about it. Reproductive cloning for breeding purposes is done quite frequently now in animals. Here's old Dolly the sheep. 1996, the first fully grown mammal to be cloned. Dolly didn't last too long, but she did reach to be a full adult. The problem with cloning is that most of the research now is up in the air. Because there is a question whether it should even be banned or not. Okay. Therapeutic cloning, for example, is not practiced yet in this country. And we'll talk more about reproductive and therapeutic cloning in a second. There's only been one stem cell line ever created in the world through therapeutic cloning. And that is in South Korea in the early part of this year. Only one. Okay. None in this country. So what is the process of cloning? How is it done? Well, actually, as I said, it's very simple. A somatic cell is any cell of the body that has 46 chromosomes, as opposed to a sex cell, which only has 23 chromosomes. Okay? So, if you take a somatic cell, and most of the time they're taken from the skin, if you take a somatic cell, and if you take the nucleus, which houses all 46 chromosomes, you take it out of that cell, and then you take an egg that has 23 chromosomes, and you take the nucleus out of that egg, that now it has no chromosomes, and then you take the 46 chromosomes from the somatic cell and put it into the egg, now the egg has what? 46 chromosomes. And those 46 chromosomes can be stimulated through electroshock to produce embryos. Now, you have two pathways. Reproductive cloning requires uterine implantation. You take that embryo now and transplant it into the uterus of mammals, and you will have a cloned individual or a cloned animal that will have the same DNA as the donor. The same DNA. Okay. If you take that and let it grow in a petri dish to form a stem cell line, you have the process of therapeutic cloning. Therapeutic cloning. That is how stem cell lines are developed, through the process of therapeutic cloning. Some people believe that therapeutic cloning may be one day the solution to immune rejection, because it's your same immune system. You can actually get your own stem cell line from that. If you think about it, in theory, in practicality, it's not done, but it can be. The only problem is you are creating embryos for the sole purpose to destroy them for research. If you think about that, that's what they are, because they are embryos. And as I said, there's only been one stem cell line created in the world. The problem is therapeutic cloning is agenda driven. In July of this year, 2004, at the Democratic National Convention, a speech was given by Ronald Reagan Jr., the son of the ex-president, where he said that anybody who did not believe that these processes should be advanced forward are ignorant. And he said that cures with these processes are just around the corner. The problem is, he wasn't even talking about embryonic stem cell research through in vitro fertilization clinics. He was talking about therapeutic cloning. The process that he described was therapeutic cloning, a process that doesn't even exist in this country today. And yet, there is one bill at the Capitol of these United States to be approved that is up for vote to approve therapeutic cloning. Now, what is the true story about stem cell research? What has been done and what hadn't been done? Well, this is fairly up to date. The problem with this information is every time you pick up the newspaper or you pick up a scientific journal or something, there's something new. And so I've tried to make this material, and especially this part of the material, as up to date as I can. But it's a little bit difficult. Okay. As I said, in 1998, the first embryonic stem cell line was from the University of Wisconsin, Dr. Thompson. A lot of people, though, did not like his area of research, and a lot of American researchers have obtained their stem cell lines from Israel. I find that kind of interesting. I'm not sure why. Over the last 5 years, really, embryonic stem cell research has evolved around the development of stem cell lines. I said it takes sometimes 4 to 6 months to develop a stem cell line. So just getting the stem cell lines in place so that other research can be done has been the main thrust of the research to date. Now, embryonic stem cell research is not illegal. As a matter of fact, there are two major universities, one on the East Coast, Harvard, and one on the West Coast, Stanford, who have major stem cell institutes. There are two private corporations that also are involved, very involved quite a bit in stem cell research. But to date, there have been no human trials with embryonic stem cell research. Now, as far as adult stem cell research goes, getting ahead of myself here. Come to this. As far as embryonic, let's go back. No, that's right. I'm sorry. Okay. As far as adult stem cell research goes, here is some preliminary information for you. This is what I have found, besides bone marrow transplantation. There has been some nerve regrowth and cardiac cell repair in mice. There has been some spinal cord repair in rats. The main defect in the Parkinson's disease is when the nerve cells cannot produce the chemical dopamine. There have been some neural stem cells that have actually been able to produce dopamine. Pancreatic islet cell transplantation and corneal transplantation have been successful. Can't really get into detail how that's done, but they have been successful. There have been also reports of cardiac function in the adult in Germany and Brazil being improved with adult stem cell research. There have been reports of leukemias and lymphomas actually cured with umbilical cord stem cells. I mentioned the case of Dennis Turner, a gentleman who had his own stem cells from his brain injected into him who had Parkinson's disease, and he had partial reversal of this disease, but this case wasn't very well publicized, and he is right now trying to get another stem cell transplant of his own stem cells in order to actually reverse the processes that have now recurred in his situation. What about embryonic stem cell research? There have been sporadic reports that embryonic stem cells have produced insulin. However, there are some reputable labs that says that data is false. There have been reports that embryonic stem cells have grown beating heart cells, have grown also retinal pigment cells, and in mice, there have been neural cells that produce dopamine in Parkinson's in embryonic stem cells. Also, there's an interesting study that's coming out where it shows that rats where they've taken their spinal cords and they've bruised them so that they cannot walk, have been injected with embryonic stem cells from humans, and within 9 weeks, they have been able to walk. The first human clinical trial with embryonic stem cells is probably about 2 to 3 years away. There are no models, human models, to follow. Medical breakthroughs, 10, maybe 20 years away. Maybe. But whether you agree or disagree, the research will continue. The big issue is who's going to pay. Who's going to pay? Now, researchers have a lot of problems with embryonic stem cells. There's a lot of hurdles. Sometimes the lines are difficult to maintain. The lines are unstable. It takes a lot of embryos to form stem cell lines. But the biggest hurdle, is where you take that undifferentiated stem cell and try to change it into a specialized or differentiated cell. That signal to change that cell from unspecialized to specialized is different in every organ of the body. It's different. And so that process right there is the limiting factor in research at this point in time. So even if embryonic stem cells or stem cells can be implanted, what will happen? Will the cells function properly? Will they last for a long time? Who knows? And so the fear, might you might think, what will happen if you run out of embryos? Could be some business there. Could be some business. Women may sell their eggs in order to form embryonic stem cell lines. I will guarantee you that if it's profitable, big business will be there. What about if you take development a step farther? If you take it a step farther, you might have some spare parts formed. And then who can afford it? Only those people that can afford it? Really, the future moral, social, and financial implications in the next 10 to 20 years with this research may be tremendous. Government policy and legislation. In 1993, federal funding ban was lifted on fetal tissue research. But in 1995, the so-called Dickey Amendment was passed by Congress, which stated that there would be no federal funding for any human embryonic research. However, in 2000, under the Clinton administration, there were some restrictions to this funding eased. In August of 2001, President Bush, however, said that federal funds would only be appropriated for embryonic stem cell lines that were developed before August 2001, not afterwards. There would be no federal funds. When President Bush made this statement, he said that there were about 60 to 70 of these stem cell lines available. They appropriated through NIH grants $25 million. However, of those 60 to 70 stem cell lines which were available, only about 11 to 20, it depends on who you read, were worth anything. And most scientists believe that many of those embryonic stem cell lines were contaminant. So that policy is being challenged today. Other nations, federal funding, approved federal funding for embryonic stem cell research: England, Japan, Korea, Germany, France, Australia, some names. In 2001, it is interesting that the English Parliament was the first country actually to authorize human embryo cloning for research. However, they have yet to create a therapeutic cloning stem cell line, whereas South Korea has done it. The bills in Congress at present to ban cloning in all forms, but there's one bill to approve therapeutic cloning, the so-called Hatch-Feinstein bill. Presently, there are about 60 senators and about over 200 representatives that are calling for President Bush to reverse his 2001 policy on stem cell research restriction, embryonic stem cell research restriction funding. Proposition 71 is on the California ballot next week. It says that they will appropriate the state of California $3 billion for embryonic stem cell research. Governor Schwarzenegger is fully backing this bill. Now, you know, researchers have ethics. They do. Scientists have some ethics. There are some ethical views. I would like to present you with some quotes from some researchers on how that they justify using embryonic, justify research of embryonic stem cells. Quotes, healing specific diseases can only be attained from an understanding of the earliest form of development. Quote, since animal model embryos are not governed by the SPCA, then why should human model embryos be governed by the government? No uterine implantation, as far as the research scientist says, equals no personhood. The in vitro embryo has no personhood because it has not been implanted. Another thought. There is really no difference morally in embryonic stem cell research than in vitro fertilization clinics discarding embryos. Perhaps that is a point well taken, if you think about it. Another quote. It is well worth the risk of being destroyers of early life in an effort to be savers of adult life. Understanding human development and improvement of health override any objection to in vitro embryonic experimentation. Basically, what they're saying is, what can be done should be done. Now, this slide shows us examples of those religiously who may oppose and approve embryonic stem cell research. I'm not really emphasizing what religious groups teach in this country, but I thought it would give you an idea as to who stands where as a group. The U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops are staunch opposers to embryonic stem cell research, and I quote, supporting embryonic stem cell research is a sin. There are elements to this agenda, speaking of embryonic stem cell research, that make it even more serious than abortion. The Lutheran Assembly, interesting, opposes embryonic stem cell research, but approves abortion. Figure it. Focus on the Family and National Right to Life are not religious organizations. However, they are adamantly opposed to embryonic stem cell research. And these are areas that churches that approve it. But there are many on the fence, middle of the road, middle grounders. And perhaps some of us may fit into that. You never know. Embryonic stem cell research is okay if the goals are unreachable by any other means, i.e. adult stem cell research. Embryonic stem cell research is okay on discarded embryos, but cannot create embryos for the sole purpose of research. Or embryonic stem cell research is okay, but therapeutic cloning is wrong. Embryonic research is wrong. Embryonic stem cell research is wrong, but in vitro fertilization is all right, the position of many Protestants and Catholics. And embryonic stem cell research is okay, but the disruption of intrauterine or natural pregnancy is not. That is abortion, of course. Again, many people believe this, including some of our conservative senators, Senators Hatch and Senator Lott. Mary Tyler Moore, the heralded actress, is a pro-life Republican, but she equates the use of surplus embryos for research to organ donation by these who will inevitably die. She is also the president of the International Foundation of Diabetes. Do the principles that are laid down in the scriptures as related to God's view on the sanctity of life, do they apply here? The principles are very clear, but do they apply here? The four basic principles. When you make something and you create something that is like you, what worth do you put on that? What worth do you put on that? The closest thing that I can think of are your children. Are your children. What worth do you put on that? Do you remember the commercial where it says such and such $25, such and such $35, and then priceless? Made in God's image. I would say that was on the priceless side. Okay? That's how God views the sanctity of life. Our bodies are His temple. 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19 through 20. Your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. Glorify God in your body. So what does the temple house? It houses our spiritual side. Where did our spiritual side come from? God gave it to us, didn't He? Of course He did. But our spiritual side is housed in what? Our body. Why do you think He says, glorify God in your body? But sadly, so many times we don't do that, do we? Not at all. Thirdly, the destruction, the shedding of innocent blood is condemned. The perpetual covenant command in Genesis 9:6 is whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. Why? Because in the image of God, He made man. He made man. But fourthly, and most important, is that I believe that God considers all stages of life sacred. And I believe He uses the example best of His own Son. Luke 1, 24, 36, 39, 41 through 45. In these verses, we see the conception or the fertilization of two human beings. John the Baptist, son of Elizabeth, and Jesus the Christ, son of Mary. Elizabeth conceived John first. 6 months later, Mary conceived Jesus. When they met in verse 39, it says that John, who was 6 months older than Jesus at this time, he was a six-month-old fetus, it says that he leaped in her womb. And down in verse 44, it says that he leaped with joy. A miraculous emotion? Yes, but an emotion nonetheless for a fetus. For a fetus. Okay? Elizabeth, basically, when she met Mary, she said that blessed are you among women because, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. Elizabeth knew that Mary was pregnant. Now, she couldn't have been pregnant for very long because we know that John was 6 months older. Jesus had to be in the early embryonic stage. No question about it. But yet, what does she say to Mary? She says that Jesus, she says, why has this been granted to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? She recognized that Jesus, in the early embryonic stage of development, was Lord. He was her Lord. Not her potential Lord, but her Lord. Two stages of human development presented to us in God's Word. The six-month-old fetus and the early embryo. Now, how do you think God considered those two stages of development? Well, one of them was a son. One of them was a son. So does the end justify the means? What is the end? The end is noble. The end, the relief of human suffering. The healing is one of the greatest goods that someone can do. The Good Samaritan rule. One advocate of embryonic stem cell research says there is no dignity in watching people die unnecessarily. Truly an emotional appeal. Jesus healed the sick. Jesus raised the dead. Jesus gave people rest
who were weary.
He was a humanitarian. But how do we get there? What about the means? Is it through stem cell research and its applications? Is the means a true challenge to the sanctity of life? Is the early form of human life that grows in a dish outside the uterus, that is the same as what is growing inside the mother? When does personhood evolve in human development? Is it extended to the in vitro embryo? I'm reminded of what the Apostle Paul says in Romans, the 3rd chapter, verse 8, when he says that we must remember that if we do no good, so that good may come from that, it's not right. It's not right. Not right. Somebody's going to ask me the question, well then, when do you think human life begins? Is it with conception? Fertilized egg? The natural fertilized egg? The test tube fertilized egg? Or is it conception and implantation being a developmental necessity? Is the phases of embryonic and fetal development, where one's personhood grows as the preborn child grows, it's Jewish doctrine? Or is it with birth? An abortionist would certainly have you to believe that. If you really believe in eternal life, if you believe in everlasting life, probably the best way to look at it is life instead is just a continuum. It's a bridge. It's a bridge. And then you don't really have to think about beginnings and ends. I'm reminded of the flailings of the Supreme Court 31 years ago in 1973, when abortion became protected under the law, when they said that we really cannot determine when life begins, human life begins, but it is probably related somewhere to the fetus's ability to survive outside the womb. A very flailing and feeble attempt to identify human life. In closing, I'd like to say, just as each one of us was, is, an adolescent, a child, an infant, we were also fetuses and embryos. Did you ever think about that? We were never just an egg. We were never just a sperm cell. But we were embryos. A stage of early development in the natural development of human beings, the Homo sapien, through processes of internal cellular differentiation, multiplication, integration, and development, every human adult has developed from the embryonic stage through various other stages to get to where you are right now. You know that the 46 chromosomes that you had when you were an embryo are the same 46 chromosomes that you have in every cell of your body right now. Same. They're no different. They're the same. We all came into being as what? A human being. Not at some point along the way did we become a human being. We were never potential human beings, but we were what? We were embryos who had the potential to become adults. If I'm wrong about this, then perhaps you can let me know. I'll leave you with three quotes that I basically, these are self-quotes. Freedoms of choice and the liberties that we have in Christ are not necessarily to do what we want, but instead to do what we must to please Him. It is God who determines and demands and directs us, not ourselves. Even though the alleviation of human suffering is a noble calling and certainly a biblical principle, it cannot really compare to man's need to fear God and keep His commandments, which would include respect and protection of both life, spiritual, physical. Why? Because that is what He has given us to worship Him. That is what He's given us. Your mind to reason right and wrong is God's gift to you. Use it wisely. Thank you.
Well, we've been given quite a lot to think about. We want to take just a few minutes now. I understand earlier, as I pointed out, that some of you may need to leave. We're going to go a little longer than we had stated in the advertisements. And if you need to leave now at this time, we perfectly understand. If you would like to stay for the questions that will inevitably be asked and the answers that Rod will give, then we encourage you to do so. At this time, if you have not written a question down but you've got one, please do so on the back of the card that you were given at the very beginning when you came in. If you will, make sure that you fill the card out. And at this time, if you've got your questions, begin to pass them to the inside aisle. Over to the side, if you'll pass them over towards the far wall, we'll have some men who will come by and pick those up. I'm glad most were able to stay. There are several questions here that Brother McMillan's going to deal with, so once everyone's seated, I'll turn everything over to him because he's far more of an expert in these things than I am.
You guys let me off kind of easy. Guess that's good, huh? I don't know if that means the presentation was was a little bit too much or what. First question was, are adult stem cells or embryonic stem cells harvested through the placenta or the umbilical cord? If umbilical cord blood or the placenta is used, those would be adult stem cells, okay, not embryonic stem cells. And umbilical cord blood is being used more often. There was another question on umbilical cord blood. Could you talk briefly about the process of saving it? What basically is just pretty much where you save the placenta and the umbilical cord and harvest the blood and the blood and the material from the umbilical cord and you save it just like you would any other blood specimen. The biblical position on organ donation? That's easy. I believe that organ donation is the right thing to do. That's my personal opinion. Obviously, there was no such thing as organ donation in biblical times, but I think the principles of the sanctity of life and the preservation of life, and actually, when you're talking about Good Samaritan, I think there's very little that you could do better than to give someone life or to give someone else, do something else in a position where you have had your physical life taken from you. The Good Samaritan rule, does it apply to euthanasia? I do not believe so. There's a lot of things we could talk about. Euthanasia is a totally different subject. And perhaps sometimes we could talk about that. But I do not believe that the Good Samaritan rule applies to euthanasia, according to the Bible. There was one question that says, what is the big white space in the blastocyst? Well, since it's only a tiny dot, it's not too big and it's not too wide. But basically, that is the space that is created between the pre-placenta or the trophoblastic cells and the inner cell mass. And it's just that way because that's the best way that it can be implanted into the uterus. And that's the way God made it. But that's the way that, that's for that. Since 1973, when the Supreme Court related personhood to viability, how has that standard changed due to advancements? Well, it changed actually initially because human viability outside the womb has changed as far as the number of weeks. But really, below 20 or 21 weeks, viability is almost impossible. But back when the Supreme Court was in 1973, it was about 28 to 30 weeks. So that has changed to some degree. But it's about the same as it's been for the last few years. It really hasn't changed much since then. Can embryos be donated when a person dies? I don't know exactly how that question would be stated. Could a female donate her eggs when she dies? That would be perhaps more appropriate because an embryo really could not be donated to anything because an embryo would have to be a developing developing embryogenesis would have to be taking a, be happening in the body at this time when a person dies, and I don't think there would be any ability to do that. I do have, here's one. I have a relative with leukemia, and I understand that he needs the placenta or umbilical cord blood. Does this involve stem cell use? Well, yes, it does, but it's perfectly good use as far as I'm concerned, as far as stem cells go, because umbilical cord blood is where adult stem cells are harvested. Now, the problem you have to have is you have to have an adequate donor match, because it's not any different than bone marrow transplantation as far as having a donor match. But there's certainly nothing wrong with that at all, that I see. Any other questions? These were the only questions that I had. Yes, you have a question.
Could you take it from the belly button?
No, those veins have long gone, and they're not they're really not accessible. It would have to be a newborn. It would have to be from a newborn. Yes?
Why do they say that the blood cord is better to take stem cells from than an adult?
Because the potential that they can differentiate into more cell types, and they grow faster and they grow more rapidly, and they are much more, I guess, amenable to trauma. As an adult gets older, it is more difficult to harvest adult stem cells, even in bone marrow transplants. You take someone who is a bone marrow transplant donor, after a certain age, you just can't be, because the stem cells are no good. So in theory, the younger the donor, the better. Umbilical cord blood is rich in stem cells.
And what is the difference in the embryonic stem cells and blood?
Well, of course, the child has been born, and the umbilical cord has basically. You mean as far as the person, or?
Well, you said that there's been no research done on embryonic.
No, there's been no. There's been no human trials or models, right, on embryonic stem cells. But umbilical cord stem cells have been used in treating leukemias and lymphomas, and have had much success. But I consider umbilical cord stem cells as another component of adult stem cells. Yes?
Originally, the stem cells could go any direction and reproduce itself and become any part, any cell in the body.
Yes, except for the sex cells, right.
There's a differentiation where those stem cells say, I will be good for making parts of the heart, but for no other part of the body.
Right.
Is that due to some activity in the gene packets that differentiate those cells somewhere along the line from I can do anything to now my
right.
programming tells me I'm going to be a heart cell?
Actually, you're right, because what happens is that stem cells to repair the heart muscle are in the heart. They're not in the bone marrow, in adult stem cells. And it's like basically each organ has its own little repair kit. And that's just the way that we're made. There is a term called plasticity. I didn't mention it too much, but there has been some research to say that there are some adult stem cells that actually, especially in the bone marrow, that actually can differentiate or change into other cells if stimulated properly. But it's the signal that's the problem. That's where the problem is. Because every organ has a different signal, evidently. There's one in the back here.
So, have the cord blood cells already been differentiated in some way that make? Why can't you use those the same way you use embryonic stem cells? I guess.
Well, you can't. First of all, you have to form a stem cell. You have to form a stem cell line, but they can be transplanted like bone marrow. But the reason why you can't use them the same way as embryonic stem cells is because there has to be a donor match. In other words, they have immunologic capabilities of being rejected if there's not appropriate donor match.
And embryonic cells don't?
Right.
Okay.
Because they're so early, they have not differentiated into anything.
So with the cord blood cells, you can't create a stem cell line with them?
No. No, you cannot create a stem cell line. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks.
Rod has put a lot of work into this, and we appreciate it. He has dealt with an issue that, as we said earlier, we all hear about, but we may not always understand. And what we want to all understand as we leave here is that there are moral and ethical ramifications to this. And as people who fear God and understand that we have been made in the image of God, we have an obligation, as Rod pointed out so well, to honor the sanctity of life. Questions may still abound. And what strikes me as human technology continues, I suspect we will be faced with more questions like this. And that's why we just have to keep going back to the Bible and keep going back to the fundamental principles that our brother reminded us of what life is and what the purpose of life is and how it is to be used. Thank you very much, Rod. Again, for those visiting with us, I know several of you have driven a long way. We appreciate your coming. Pray that you'll have a safe drive back home. If you are someone who lives in the community, again, we appreciate you being here and would invite you to be back anytime you have an opportunity. We're going to meet together to worship at 7:30 Wednesday night. We'll meet Sunday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning and then 6 o'clock that evening for worship services. There's free literature in the back as you leave. If you'll look on the far wall, there's a table underneath that. Which will really just give you an idea of who we are and give you an idea of what your purpose in life is, and invite you to pick that up. Thank you for being here tonight. Let's dismiss with a word of prayer.